This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Taiwan, the news from East Asia via London. China says military exercises around Taiwan complete. PLA confirms it will regularly conduct patrols and drills in the area. I welcome Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and we welcome Charles Burton of the McDonnell Laurier Institute to comment on lessons learned these last days of China's warships, warplanes, rhetoricians, wolf warriors, all stomping their feet about the visit of the Speaker of the House to the capital of Taiwan. Charles, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. What have you learned about the PLA and its ability to fire rockets into the ocean? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I think that, you know, the People's Liberation Army is a function of the Chinese Communist Party and not a function of the Chinese state. And I think that they are serving the interests of the party by affirming the rhetoric that the people in Taiwan are yearning to be liberated by the People's Republic of China and to become a province of China and participate in China's great rise, and I guess 300 years since become communist like China. And so the People's Liberation Army has done these exercises, I think, primarily to serve the domestic constituency in China that has been so inculcated with a notion of the sanctity of the nationalistic myth that Taiwan is an integral part of the sacred continent, as they refer to it, China as a whole, that when Xi Jinping was shunned by President Biden and Nancy Pelosi by refusing to accept that discourse and to be willing to engage the democratic government of Taiwan, an independent government not controlled from Beijing, that they had to do something to say to the people that you know, the Chinese myth, as articulated by the Chinese Communist Party, is valid, and here's how we're implementing it.
Gordon, you have a question for our friend Charles.
Charles, did Xi Jinping do enough with regard to Taiwan to satisfy the, quote, Chinese people?
I don't think so. I mean, from what we hear, you know, the idea that they would do 4 days of military exercises and then everything would be over and we'd go back to status quo ante and Pelosi would sort of fade into the background is not proven to be the case. And certainly in the Chinese internet, there's a great deal of demands that the Chinese should continue to threaten Taiwan and continue to make progress towards annexing Taiwan into the People's Republic of China. So I don't think the idea that they can declare that the military exercise is over and the point has been made will satisfy nationalistic imperatives in China. They'll have to continue to do things around Taiwan to give Chinese people the impression that they're making some progress towards achieving this sacred nationalistic obligation to liberate the people of Taiwan and bring them into the embrace of the motherland, as they put it.
Charles, there's a foreign policy chestnut in the United States for many decades, many administrations, that the American foreign policy is domestic policy projected over the shoreline, overseas. Is that true for China?
Well, certainly, you know, if one sees American foreign policy as an extension of the values and principles of the U.S. Constitution, then one could see that Chinese foreign policy is an expression of the ideology of the Chinese Communist Party expressed in the Constitution of the Chinese Communist Party, which is about global liberation. But what it's really about today is China restoring itself as China perceives it as the dominant power on the planet to which all other nations will be subordinate. I mean, let's remember that this activity on Taiwan is not just about Taiwan. It's about coastal waters and access to important shipping channels and a general expansion of China's interest in that region.
Gordon, you have a question.
Charles, a few hours ago, Beijing issued its third white paper this century about Taiwan. And that new white paper does not include standard conciliatory language that has been a staple of Chinese foreign policy for decades. So, for instance, the white paper does not include the promise that there will be, if there is unification, there will be no Chinese administrators, no Chinese troops on Taiwan. That can't be playing very well in Taiwan. Why would Beijing issue a white paper like that?
Well, I think, again, it seems to be mostly about domestic considerations. I mean, certainly now opinion polls indicate there's essentially nobody in Taiwan who believes in the integrity of the one country, two systems formula that was articulated by Deng Xiaoping and applied to Hong Kong until it wasn't. And so I think from that point of view, the idea that the Chinese system is the superior system and that it should, that democracy and freedom should not be allowed to continue in Taiwan because those are simply sham institutions that support the U.S. hegemony over the world is part of this new discourse. So obviously it's very bad news for Taiwan and fits in with statements made by, for example, the Chinese ambassador in France that once Taiwan is annexed, they'll have to do extensive ideological work to remove the separatist tendencies from Taiwanese people in their hearts and minds and to bring them round to the idea that they are Chinese and should be supporting the purposes and agenda of the Chinese Communist Party. Well, I mean, you know, that's certainly a lot easier said than done. Can you break people's freedom and aspirations to citizenship and human rights and democracy and rule of law and get them to be happy about becoming subject to the autocratic authoritarian oppression of the Chinese Communist Party? It would be a bit of a stretch, but that seems to be the only discourse that China can manage under current circumstances.
Gordon, the Chinese economy is struggling. I speak generally. Is that a driver for Xi Jinping to send out this gathering of people behaving badly in the Taiwan Strait? Does that help him?
I think it must in the sense that it does distract the Chinese people from the distress in the real property sector, for instance. The Chinese economy is extremely fragile right now, especially with the debt crisis. The property companies defaulting, the mortgage boycotts, the bank runs. So Xi Jinping could certainly use a distraction somewhere outside of China. And you know, our friend Arthur Waldron of the University of Pennsylvania says that China doesn't really have a foreign policy, that China's foreign policy has really only one goal, and that is the maintenance of Communist Party rule. So we have to assume that everything is connected to that goal.
And Charles, we're weeks away from the General Secretary seeking his third term. Did this demonstration help him in your measure?
Oh, I don't think so. I think the fact that, you know, there's nothing that he can do to satisfy the Chinese people about Taiwan except annexing Taiwan through force suggests that this has weakened him. And certainly I there are a lot of other aspects, you know, his handling of the COVID-19, the refusal to import the effective mRNA vaccines, the horrendous impact on the economy, the collapse of real estate companies in China who, you know, haven't been able to pay back debt, and people who have put deposits on homes that will never be built. You know, all these things certainly weigh heavily against his leadership. But that being said, it looks like he's going to get the third term. The question is, once he does have the third term, will he be able to sustain his power much longer?
Charles Burton of the McDonnell Laurier Institute commenting on what we're told now is the end of the military exercises around Taiwan by the People's Liberation Army, Navy, Air Force. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.